As I am now here, time and I are one, for should time not include coming and departing, the eternal now is the very moment when the mountain is climbed. That is what I just said, what I just explained. And the river cross, the time at which the mountain is climbed and the river is crossed, engulfs the time when I am within my lordly mansion. The time when I am within my lordly mansion is the time at which I cross the river and climb the mountain. Therefore, the eternal is thought of as flowing. It is an eternal flow. It is not static, but it is not changing. There is a difference in not being static. Someone yesterday said, but surely it is always changing. No, it never changes, but it is not static. People mistake change for being... They mistake being non-static for being changing. And that's not so. They frequently think that constant change is a sign of being alive. I can remember having a roommate when I was at college who was constantly rearranging the furniture in the room. When I asked her why, she informed me it proved that she was still alive with all those books to read. All it did for me was make me fall over things when I came in late. It is important to know the difference between change and being alive. A live thing is not static. A changing thing is something that is not constant. He now goes on to explain that although all is one, all is different, and one must still see the non-static life of the eternal in the change. The three heads and eight arms of Kanzeon Bodhisatta are the time of yesterday, while the time of being a Buddha 8 or 10 feet tall is that of today. The three heads and eight arms. For those who don't understand why Buddhist statues so often have lots of arms and lots of heads, Kanzeon, the compassionate Buddha, has to be able to see all the places where help is needed. So she has three heads and hundreds of eyes, and she has eight arms, or some have as many as 1,000 arms, to be able to give all the help at all the time. It is an example of what a true, truly compassionate being is, seeming to have 1,000,000 arms to help the world and its people. There was a time of that, and maybe that was yesterday, but that is the full eternal. When it was Kanzeon, it was not just part of the eternal that was Kanzeon. Therefore, the Buddha was as much present, the eternal was as much present yesterday as it is today. That we see a Buddha today does not mean that there is more of the eternal today than there was of yesterday when we saw Kanzeon. It does not mean that because there is no Buddha spoken of as a Buddha, that there is less of a Buddha here in this room than there was at the time of Shakyamuni. I am looking at 15 or so Buddhas that are to come, but they are still fully representative of the eternal. And if you cannot look at people, no matter how they are dressed or how degraded they may have become in the world or how important they may have become in the world, if you cannot look at them with those eyes, you cannot see the eternal. All must be seen as the eternal. And not only seen, it must be known to be the eternal. The eternal must be able to be felt, seen, smelt, tasted, touched in them and in everything else. It is not a thing of yesterday. It is not a thing of today. It is not a thing of tomorrow. The eternal is the eternal flowing, the non-static eternal. Therefore, Dogen says, what we say is yesterday and today is one and the same thing in the same way as when looking at mountains we see many peaks with only one glance. Time itself never flows, for the Kanzeon Bosatsu of yesterday passes on as our existence, time, with the flow. That is a memory. That is in the past. Therefore, time and existence do not flow. They are memories. They are positions. Only the eternal keeps the flow going. It may appear to be elsewhere, because Kanzeon was yesterday and the Buddha is today. But it is actually just as much here and now as it was when we saw it. Although the lights are not on, they're just as much here as they were yesterday. Keep this in mind. Excuse me. The Buddha, who is 8 or 10 feet tall, the one of today, passes on as our existence and time, exhibiting the eternal, seeming again to be elsewhere, but actually being here and now, no change. As the above is true, both the pine and the bamboo are time. Sometimes we see them, sometimes we don't, but they are still here. Time does far more than merely fly away. There is much more to it than that. If all you can understand is that time flies, you cannot understand Uji, for you will always be seeing with worldly eyes. By such understanding, what you have realized, you see, is something that is passing away. And that means that you do not know what reality is. For only the eternal is real. I don't think I'm going to be able to get through the whole of this thing, not doing it this deeply anyway. In the end, you will realize that all existences are joined together and are themselves existence, time, flow. Sometimes we see, sometimes we don't, as the world understands it. But always we are seeing the eternal. My own personal time, the time at which I am alive, as you understand the term, is what concerns most of us here. But you should know that the chief tray of Uji, time, existence, flow, is continuity. Going from today to tomorrow, and from today to yesterday, and from yesterday to today, and from today to today, and from tomorrow to tomorrow. Do not think that there is a difference. One of the things that really hits you in a big monastery like Sojiji is the fact that there are absolutely no calendars. I tried to stop having calendars in Sojiji, and everybody yelled, they've got to have calendars. So in the end, I let them have calendars. But in a big temple like Sojiji, there aren't any. You have a rough idea of dates, because certain days somebody rings a certain bell or bangs a piece of wood and it's time to shave your head. Or the chief disciplinarian goes around and beats everybody and you know that it has to be the first of the month, the first or the 15th. Those are your only clues. And they don't really matter. And you get into this beautiful state when gradually, as a result of the actual training, none of this exists. And there is only the true existence of the eternal. That doesn't mean that you flee from the world or that you are using something to, as a crutch, for example, to get away from the world. It means that you are using everything possible to find the eternal. There's a big difference. In the East, they don't let you have newspapers either. They do, however, let you watch the news on TV, for the simple reason that the TV has to be concise. Newspapers give you all their private theories and opinions and 6 million other things as well. Everybody was allowed to have the news on TV, but people weren't allowed to have newspapers. So you were kept well informed on the world, but not sitting in your private room reading everything to avoid your training. In other words, they were not trying to prevent you knowing what was going on. They were trying to prevent you from escaping, if you like, from doing something about the selfish self, which is a very different thing. So continuity, the flowing, is one of time's chief characteristics. For neither past time nor present time accumulate. There is nothing but the eternal now. And since there is no accumulation, say again, or baku, or say, and sekitor, are all present at this present time, all the great masters. Since self and other are time, training and enlightenment are time also, as are the entering of mud and water. Although some say that the disinterested relationship of the views of the average person is what that person sees, they are wrong. For the truth simply puts the average person into passing causal relationships. They do not put him into reality. They are things that are past, passing away. Things that are temporary. And no one would want to be married to a member of the opposite sex once this has happened. If you think about it, if you have married that which is eternal, why would you wish to put yourself into a passing relationship? You see, once you've got into this relationship, everything else is unreal. You can live in the world as if in the sky. The world's a wonderful playground in which you call living things. But you know it's unreality. And knowing it's unreality, why would you wish to again join? Since we learn that time and existence are not the truth, i.e. past and present, we think that the golden body of the Buddha is not ours. And we try to free ourselves from this very fact of being the golden body of the Buddha, because we do not understand that there is a third place, this place of the eternal. And so we try to run away from the eternal, because we think of it as the golden body of the Buddha, with which we have nothing whatsoever to do. But that is wrong. If you know of this third position, this third place, the eternal, which is beyond the opposite of right and wrong, past and present, etc., if you know of that, then there is no need whatsoever to try to escape. One of the tragedies of so many Zen books is that they talk about getting beyond the opposites, for they do not explain that there is this third position. I can remember a British professor being in Japan and getting madder and madder by the minute because he felt that he was being deliberately put into a double bind to get beyond the opposites, which was impossible. And Kōhō Zenji looking at him and saying, "Well, my good man, don't you realize that there is something that's beyond the opposites?" "Well, I'm not going to believe in a god." "You're not required to," was the answer. "But there is a third place. You are not required to believe in an entity, but there is that which is unborn, unchanging, and undying. And in that place, there one can take genuine rest. And that is what one is trying to find. And there one can get beyond these opposites." People try to flee from God. I'm sure you've read The Hound of Heaven. That is to try and escape the golden body of the Buddha. But it is only because we do not know what the golden body of the Buddha is. It is because our minds have been raped by theories that we are afraid of it. When we know what it is not, we can then be free of concepts of what it is, and we do not have to escape. As Dogen says, even in this dire strait, even when we try to escape, we are still Uji. We are still in existence, time, and the flow of the eternal. As are also those who are not yet enlightened, who do not know about this. Now, I'm going to have to stop for a few minutes because this stuff's fairly intense. I suggest we have our tea break for a moment. Now, we're in the middle of page 168. I hope we get to the end of it, but I'm not sure. The hours of 12 and 1 follow each other in order in the world as we know it, and are made clear by the ascending and descending of seemingly fixed time. In other words, we created the system, and therefore we say we've made it clear. Not a nice statement, but fact. We created it, so we've made it clear. The hours of 6 and 8 are time, as are also all living things and Buddhas. There is a time when they appear, a time when they disappear. There is a time of dawn, and there is a time of evening. But the eternal is in all. The heavenly deities enlighten the world, as Kanzion Bodhisattva, through their 3 heads and 8 arms. Buddhas do the same things by means of their 10-foot-high golden bodies. All gods, whatever they may be, show the eternal. Don't get worried, just find the eternal. People got very worried about this particular chapter when it first came out because they said that Dogen was saying that you could find the eternal in everything, including all the gods of India and all the gods of China and all the gods of here and there. They said, you're darn right, you can. No one thing possesses the truth exclusively. It does not mean that because I am right, you of necessity must be wrong. There is this lovely third place where the eternal is. And you know, once you give up this idea of I am right, therefore everybody else is wrong, you'd be surprised how much you can enjoy, not only of human company, but of other things that go on in the world. For example, I can now go into a Christian church and thoroughly enjoy an oratorio or something and not feel that I'm doing something that's contrary to Buddhist teaching. This thing is expressing the eternal. I can listen to the Greek Orthodox service on Christmas Eve and realize that I am listening to the voice of the eternal. I can listen to a Jewish ceremony. They had one on TV the other night, and it was exquisite. There was the voice of the eternal again. And I can remember the voices of the Mohammedans at dawn in Malaysia, ringing out over the top of the turrets as we were reciting our scriptures. And we were all doing the same thing. We were each doing it in our own way. And these things are all time. They're all existence time. But the eternal is there, and it's seeing the eternal and knowing the eternal and not getting upset by the forms that it takes. I was very scared of things of this ilk when I first went to the East. I think I had reason, because the Christian missionaries in Malaysia hated my guts. They were convinced that I was I don't know what they thought I was going to do, but it was something dreadful. And I can remember telling this to Reverend Kim Seng, who ordained me. He said, tomorrow I will take you to a special temple. And he took me to the snake temple, which is filled with snakes everywhere. They curl around the candelabra and around the Buddhas, and there's a python that squirms around, and a few other things. And he said, I leave you here tonight. You sleep here. And I'm terrified of snakes. I said, but why? He said, you need to know Buddha nature in all snake. I said, you know like Christian. You know like snake. You need to know Buddha nature in all snake. I never mentioned the subject again after that night, but the point was well taken. They didn't harm me. I didn't sleep too well. I heard this slithering going on during the night. But the point was made, and the East will do this with you. It will stop you being an idiot. And as I see them, they're right. This temple's in Penang, by the way, if any of you ever go there. And somebody offers you incense, says, why don't you offer some incense? And a hooded cobra will look up over the top of the incense and say, hi. As you're putting the thing in, you know, yeah, they're all there still. It helps one's nerves considerably. But you see my point. Anyway, where are we? If one can transcend motion and rest, the world has been fully entered. The signs of becoming a true Buddha are shown whilst searching, attaining, both in enlightenment and in nirvana, and these are all existence, time, flow. Do not think that there is any time when you are not a Buddha. The spark of the eternal has always been within you and always will be. It will never be apart from you. The fact that you are searching for it is a joy. But because you cannot see it, man stands in his own shadow, and only he can turn round. Remember yesterday? Because you are searching for it, you need to do something about yourself in order to be able to find it. Therefore, the Buddhahood shows in each and every act. Every time you try to keep the precepts, your Buddhahood is showing. Every time you do a benevolent act, or a tender act, or a charitable act, your Buddhahood is showing. Yes, maybe it was yesterday, maybe it'll be tomorrow. Sometimes I raise the eyebrows of Shakyamuni Buddha, and sometimes I do not. Sometimes the world sees it, and sometimes it doesn't. But nothing is outside of the eternal. There is absolutely nothing more than the careful studying, therefore, of time as existence, time, and flow, the appearing and disappearing, and the knowing of the eternal in that appearing and disappearing. And remember, that was what we started with yesterday. If you can find the Buddha in life and death, then there is nothing to search for that is called enlightenment, and nothing to search for that is called nirvana, for you have found the eternal. In life, existence, in death, existence, in life, time, in death, time, appearance, disappearance, but always the eternal. However, since delusion is delusion, existence, time, flow, which is not properly studied, is the study of only half of existence, time, flow. It's sometimes also a little less than that, and sometimes a bit more, but that's all right. Delusion is not quite so neatly cut into pieces. Even a body that is incorrectly seen, however, is still the whole of existence and time and the eternal. And should you do nothing to remedy the mistake, enfolding both the before and the after, there will still be the whole of the existence, the time, the past and the present, and the eternal will still be present too. You do not lose the eternal because you do not study. But you will not know the eternal if you do not study. That is what Dogen is trying to say here. You are not going to lose your immortal soul, as the Christian would put it, but you are not going to know you've got one for certain. To be unafraid of both life and death. To work without restraint in one's own environment is the whole of existence, time, and the whole of the eternal. Do not waste time believing the above to be trivial, and at the same time do not spend hours intellectualizing about it. Get on and do it. It is believed by most that time passes. However, in actual fact, time doesn't move at all. It stays where it is. There is just the continuity. There is just the eternal. The idea of passing may be called time, but it is an incorrect one. Since one only sees it as passing, one cannot understand that it stays just where it is. This is the danger of the incorrect view that the world gives us. We train our children into seeing things this way. Then we have to train ourselves out of them. Says Dogen, how is it possible for persons holding this view to find freedom? Who is able to give expression to this freedom, even supposing that they could understand fully that time stays as it is? But should you be able to give expression to your understanding after many years, you will still be unaware of your original face. Your original face is you will be unaware of the eternal. Your original face being what you truly are, part of the eternal. The original face always in the code implies the eternal. When somebody says, before you were born, what was your original face? In other words, do you know the eternal? Have you found the eternal? That is the meaning of that particular koan. Even should you be able to give expression to your understanding after many years, you will still be unaware of your original face, for should you think of existence, time, the eternal, in the usual way, that is arising and passing, both wisdom and enlightenment merely become things that simply appear in the arising and departing of time. There was a time when I had a Kensho, as opposed to I know the eternal. I've often had people say, well, I have my Kensho on such and such a date. That is not strictly true. That was the first day at which he or she became aware of the eternal. That's all. Because the Kensho never ceased. The eternal always is. Unless you have turned away from the eternal, which is why this theory of time is so very important. Free of all craving, past, present, eternal, manifests itself, sometimes here and sometimes there. The kings of heaven, all the gods, and their servants are not apart from the arising of this past and present, from this eternal. And all beings, whether on land or in the sea, come forth from this eternal, for they are all part of the eternal, and everything has a spark of the eternal. Existence, time, flow, gives rise to all things, whether they be good or evil, and their arising is the very process of time. Nothing whatsoever being apart therefrom. Sometimes we see good, sometimes we see evil. It is only our external appearance, our external opinion thereof, that we need to do something about it or not, is what we do. But the eternal is in all things, however evil they may seem. That we cannot see it, that we have to do something about it, does not mean that the eternal does not exist in that person. It took me many years before I could realize that even Adolf Hitler
had a spark of the eternal. But he had, as did Richard Nixon, as does Richard Nixon. It's sometimes a little difficult to see, but it exists. And out of respect for that eternal, whilst disliking the selfish acts that that present owner of that spark of the eternal exhibits, owner's not quite the right word, but you know what I'm saying, that we must respect that person as part of the eternal. Do not think that anything is apart from it. It is wrong to think that continuity goes from east to west in the manner of a storm. Words are neither unmoving nor standing still, and this is an example of continuity. Spring, too, is the same as this, for therein certain events take place which are spoken of as continuity. If you can understand that nothing whatsoever exists outside of this continuity, you can understand that spring is always spring. Understand that continuity is perfected in springtime as the actual continuity of spring. There is a time when the eternal manifests as spring. There is a time when the eternal manifests as winter or autumn or summer. But the eternal is not what has changed. See the eternal in all things. The average person thinks that continuity is a passing through many worlds and lives, but this opinion is clearly obtained through inadequate training. The eternal is unchanging, but it is not static. He gives some examples then of how monks explained this, which I don't need to go into in the next paragraph, but the last paragraph on page 170 is of interest. Shorzan's disciple, Isan, once said to the trainees, "There are times when the will is adequate, but words are not. There are times when words are adequate and the will is not. There are times when both words and will are adequate, and times when neither are so." A very good point. When you really want, when the will can do it, but you can't explain it at all. When you can somehow explain it, but the will isn't ready to go. There are times when both are willing and ready, and times when they aren't. Both will and words, however, should be understood as past and present, existence, time, and all should be understood as part of the eternal. That they are ready or not does not mean that there is less eternal at one time and more eternal at another. Adequacy and inadequacy are the same. Do not think that when you are adequate, then the eternal is present, and when you are inadequate, it is not. Whether you are adequate as the world understands it, or as you understand it, or inadequate, the eternal is as it always has been. It is only your personal theories, it is only this shimmerer, this thing that is passing away, that gives you the idea of adequacy or inadequacy. Do not allow yourself to be robbed of your inheritance of the eternal by theories that your brain has cooked up of being adequate or inadequate. This is especially true for women who for centuries have been put down as spiritual people. Dogen makes it very, very clear that full spirituality is equal in both male and female. It's one of the beauties of his teachings. He does it very clearly and very loudly. So whatever you do, remember that the eternal is just as present whether you feel adequate or inadequate. And hold on to that. And the inadequacy goes very quickly. When it is adequate, it is unfinished, however. When you think you are the Buddha, all you are is something sitting on an altar to be dusted. When it is inadequate, it is already completed. Because then you know that you have to go on, go on, go on, go on. Gyate, gyate. Haragyate, haraso, gyate, bhoji, sovaka. Go on, go on, always going on, always becoming Buddha. I can remember being told that that was how I must translate it, and saying, but I'm going to get into awful trouble because nobody translates it that way. They're all going to say I'm trying to be different. And Kōhō Zenji got extremely angry and said, well, are you following them or me? So I translated it that way, and that's the way I printed it. But after I thought about it for a long time, I realized he was right. The other ways was gone, gone, gone beyond. O holy Buddha, gone beyond. That doesn't make an awful lot of sense. Gone beyond what? Gone beyond the opposites, obviously, is what the implication is. But if you are going, always going on, every day always becoming Buddha, always exhibiting the Buddhahood, then the scripture makes a lot of sense. You are not something that is dead, finished with. Will is a donkey and words are a horse. Remember I explained that yesterday? The will that wouldn't do anything and the words that were always jumping around. And after a bit, the will has to turn into willingness, to be willing to do things. And all of this, even when the will is a donkey and words are a horse, it is still the whole of Uji. It is still the whole of the eternal. They travel fastest who are not there, says Dogen. The man who knows that he has more to do is the man who's going to get on with it quickest. Since arrival is hindered by arrival, but quite definitely not hindered while on the journey. As soon as you think you've made it, you are in great danger. I've often warned people to be very careful after a kensho, because that is the time they are most likely to break the precepts. I've said to people on many occasions, there was an old Christian parson I used to know who said that the time he feared most was just after people had taken Holy Communion. And the same thing is true in Buddhism. Once you've had a kensho, the first few weeks you feel that you can't really do anything that you shouldn't do. And you do tend to make some mistakes during that time. It takes a long time for a new Roshi to realize that he can make mistakes. That's the meaning of that old story of the monk who says that the enlightened man is not bound by karma and ends up doing God knows how many lives as a fox. Because the enlightened man can go on creating karma. He's not God. He is not the eternal, but there is nothing in him that is not of the eternal. And Therefore, it is important to remember that Roshis can make mistakes, and that they do go on making karma, and the most likely time is just after a Kensho. Usually, out of the sheer joy of the Kensho. That is why in the Far East, as soon as someone has had a Kensho, he or she is sort of effectively silenced from teaching for several years until they've learned how to teach, in case they make mistakes. Makes a lot of sense. The journey is hindered by non-arrival, but not hindered by arrival. It is by means of the will that we understand the will. It is by means of words that we understand words. By being hindered, we understand hindrance, and hindrance is hindered by hindrance. And we should know that even this hindrance is part of the eternal. We should not rail against it and be angry with it. Other things may use hindrance, but no hindrance whatsoever can use other things. So be careful how you hinder others in their search for the truth. People meet me and they meet each other. Myself, my egocentric self, meets its true self. And all things cease as the world knows them. For one then enters fully into the eternal. These things could not be if the eternal was not shared by all. The koan in daily life, therefore, the problem of daily life, is will. How to grasp the will, and eventually how to be willing to go on and on and on, no matter how arid the training may become. And words are its key. What I'm doing this morning are the key. And what you read are the key. And your interpretation of them, my words and your own, are the key to loosening the will. Adequacy is oneness. Duality is inadequacy. And all of these things, however, will and words and adequacy and inadequacy, are themselves the whole of the eternal. This must be both understood and experienced thoroughly, or you will not understand this chapter, nor will you understand the eternal. Because when you have found the eternal, you will still have all your inadequacies. But you will know the eternal. You'll still be female or male. You'll be tall, short, fat, thin. It is not going to prevent you dying as the world knows it. It's not going to prevent the next-door neighbor slurping his soup and annoying you. All these things will go on. But you will know the eternal. And the annoyance will be totally different, because in knowing the eternal, you will be training thoroughly and properly, so that you may be fit to be one in death, as the world understands it, with the eternal. These things, says Dogen, have been said many times by the Zen teachers of old, but it is necessary for me to repeat them. Both will and words that go only halfway are the whole of the eternal. Those that do not even reach halfway are the whole of the eternal. In such a way as this should one study and understand. One should not feel inadequate because one is a brand new monk. The eternal is as much in the new monk as it is in the old monk. To make the Buddha raise his eyebrows and blink is half of existence time flow, and it is also the whole of existence time flow. Not to do it is half of existence, time flow, and to do it is half of existence, time flow. Depending on your theory or your opinion. If you think it is only half, then in your mind that's all it will be. If you know it to be the whole, then it will be the whole, because it is your certainty as a result of your knowledge and your training. Do not worry about externals. Even when we don't raise the eyebrows of the Buddha, even when we don't show the signs of enlightenment, to raise the eyebrows and blink the eyes is to show the signs of enlightenment. Even when we don't show the signs of enlightenment, the whole of the eternal is present. Both to study and experience these things that I've spoken of, and not to study and experience them, still the whole of the eternal is present. So whatever you do, you can't get rid of the eternal. You're stuck with it.